Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It goes without saying NATO is a very aggressive military alliance, but who would have thought that at the core of its belief system was believing in unicorns? The Biden administration's decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine demonstrates this. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. Well, we're going up the escalation ladder again, something that the Biden administration said would be a potential war crime, sending cluster bombs to Ukraine, is now regular policy here. We have a Pentagon official saying, remarkably, Russian victory worse than civilian cluster bomb deaths. That's the U.S. Pentagon. So, George, the kimono is open for everyone to see, and it's pretty ugly, George.
It certainly is very ugly, Peter. You're absolutely right in saying that the United States declared early on that it alleged Russia was using cluster bombs and that this was undoubtedly a war crime. Now, Biden says this was a very difficult decision to take. But nonetheless, we took it. And of course, this has been the Biden administration mantra all along. No, no, absolutely not. We're not going to do this. No, no, we're not going down this path on that. Yeah, all right. Once you bring it up, let's do it. Now, we've had these Wunderwaffen really from the beginning. We've been told really going all the way back to Trump and the javelins. The javelins were supposedly going to be the game changer for Ukraine. And then we've had all the howitzers and the HIMARS. Then we have the Bradley fighting vehicles. We've had the tanks, the Leopard tanks. Then we had a few weeks ago all the hullabaloo over the F-16s. So now it's the cluster munitions. And of course, these will fail inevitably. Then you have to wonder, well, what's the next step? Because, it doesn't look that NATO wants to give up. So it has to keep moving along the escalation ladder. But it has basically still no hope of winning unless it gets directly involved itself. And as Stoltenberg said, NATO is not a party to the conflict and therefore it doesn't want to get involved directly itself. Then it's hard to see what else it can do other than go on this destructive path.
You know, Martin, it's very interesting is that, they accuse the Russians of going up the escalation ladder, but it's only the Russians react to it. And that is problematic in itself. And we have discussed this on this program. But I find it really remarkable that, most of the world outlaws these munitions. Actually, a number of members of NATO do as well. But for a country like Ukraine wanting to deploy them on their own territory, I mean, again, you have to scratch your head and see what do you get out of it. You're going to destroy your agriculture, make land unusable, unsafe for maybe decades, if longer. I mean, this is desperation. This is panic, as we've talked about before, Martin.
You've taken the word out of my mouth. Desperation. Yeah, absolute desperation. And how can you look at this strategy without seeing it within a context of a losing side, a losing strategy? Because, I mean, it must be very confusing for Zelensky and his cabal in Ukraine now, in Kiev, looking at this thinking, okay, well, Joe Biden had a moment of lucidity. There was this moment of clarity which has passed. It was a few seconds where he actually said to a journalist, I think, well, we're running low on ammo. And that was the key point. We're running low on ammo. We've known this for a long time. We predicted it on this show months ago that you're going to reach this tipping point where you can't really carry on functioning. But I'm shocked, honestly, I'm really shocked that they would go this low because I know a bit about cluster bombs. In a few of the wars I've covered, there have been cluster bombs. The last one, in 2006, when the Israeli bombardment of Lebanon, where I was there covering it for Euronews, I did a report on cluster bombs. Cluster bombs are, George used the word ugly, they are really ugly. There's nothing nastier, nothing more malicious nothing really more gut-wrenching than the after effects of cluster bombs. Why? Because the people who get killed by cluster bombs are basically children. What happens with cluster bombs is that about 20% of them don't explode. The other bombs around them, the small bombs that land on the ground which do explode, cover the ones that don't explode with soil, a few centimeters of soil. So they stay in the ground for decades. You look at Laos, you know, 270 million cluster bombs the Americans dropped on Laos, and still today children are being killed by these cluster bombs. So what is the strategy behind this? I'm wondering, I just wonder how much of this is coming from Ukraine and coming from Kiev. Are they factoring in? I think what we're looking at here is these are not going to be used in an offensive with an offensive strategy. I think they're going to be used in a defensive way, or when they assume Russians will finally break the lines and come over. And possibly what happens is you drop a lot of cluster bombs, you create just absolutely gargantuan civilian deaths by cluster bombs. And in this confusion, the Kiev American propaganda machine will actually fudge it and fake it and show this to be a Russian atrocity. Look what the Russians have done. You know, we were just poor and defenseless. We had to use our cluster bombs against their powerful tanks and their powerful army. And now the images that we've got now, you know, it's interesting. On the internet, we've got a lot of images of Russian and Ukrainian troops killing each other. Horrible, horrific images. What we don't have much of is dead children and dead civilians. That's going to change. The cluster bomb decision will create a new media agenda, and you're going to see lots of free handout video for all Western media. And the subject is going to be dead civilians and dead children. And it's going to be on this side of the border, on the Ukraine side.
Yeah, but it will be American cluster. It'll be American-made cluster bombs that did
American
it. George, looking at this in a bigger perspective. So in a couple of days, there will be the Vilnius NATO summit. So we're not going to give you membership, but we're going to give you cluster bombs where you can pollute your own territory. What a deal. What do you say, George?
Well, it's a real bargain. Without doubt, I mean, that's going to be the message. But the interesting thing is, you mentioned about how the most NATO member states actually signed on to the Convention on Cluster Munitions. I think something like 25 out of 31, so it's almost all of them have signed on. So what are they doing about it at the moment? They're letting known to their favorite journalists, well, we're very, very unhappy about this. This is not a good thing. You know, we're losing our moral standing. You know, we're in the moral high ground. We're ceding the high ground to the Russians. But of course, the Americans, you know, just laugh in their sleeve when they hear this, because it doesn't matter what America's NATO partners say. America calls the shots. Yeah. And our friend Stoltenberg said this. Well, we have different views on this. Some like it, some don't like it. Some think it's illegal, some don't. It's up to each individual NATO member states. And that's it. That's going to be the position. You know, we can complain, but America calls the shots. And I think that's really going to be it. So Biden sort of made clear, we're not going to get Ukraine into NATO while the war is taking place. So why did he say this? Well, yes, the Baltic states, Poland, you know, were blustering. You gotta get it in now. Now's the time to do it. But none of these are serious military forces. I mean, the only country in NATO that is a serious military force is the United States. And obviously, the United States knows Ukraine's in NATO, then it means war with Russia. And actually, it doesn't want that. So that's it. You know, well, so therefore, we're going to fob you up cluster munitions, and, you know, we'll give you a NATO Ukraine Council. It's a very, very grand title. NATO Ukraine Council, you can have that. But no membership for the time being.
Well, Martin, I mean, why would the U.S. support membership? I mean, they have the best of all possible worlds right now. Is it they can give munitions and armory and everything else to the Ukrainians and still be able to, quote unquote, stay out of the conflict while their Ukrainian brethren are dying in droves. I mean, and now their children will start dying here. I mean, the people in Washington, Victoria Nuland, Jake Sullivan, Blinken, they must think this is such a sweetheart deal for them, not Ukrainians, of course.
At the moment, yes, I think so. And you're absolutely right. Why would the Americans sign up to anything which would just take this conflict to a completely new level, a new level that most of us couldn't even imagine in our worst dreams? They want to contain it. But it's interesting. The Stoltenberg press conference a couple of days ago revealed quite a lot. And I admit, I watched it. Don't laugh. I did watch it and I listened to him. And some of the things that he was saying were quite profound. I think there's a money problem, not only a hard military hardware problem. There's also a money problem. And the problem with these institutions like NATO and like the EU is that they have a default setting, in my experience, after covering them for all these years. And the default setting is when things don't go well, we ask for more money. The EU does it all the time. You know, when we fail, what we do, we ask for more money. It sounds crazy, but that's what they do. And that's what's happening right now with NATO. Stoltenberg, I think, has been kept on for another year, not just because he's just the most sycophantic, servile, vile puppy that Biden could ever imagine, and he is, but it's all about money. NATO needs more money.
Well, also, Martin, who really wants the job at this point, okay? I mean, the way things are going, this conflict will be bookend by Stoltenberg. It'll be Biden-Stoltenberg's war, and we'll be talking about it for a long time. But he's got his name all over it. I don't think there's a lot of people that say, I don't know if that's a good career move right now, because they're defaulting to cluster bombs. You want to be, who else would want to be in that situation? I'm sorry, keep going.
No, so back with the money thing. I mean, Stoltenberg made a huge issue about NATO budget was expanded by 8% this year, which he said was completely unprecedented. Well, it will need to be. It'll need to be expanded by a lot more than that. And that he's so happy that 11 members are currently reaching the 2% of GDP criteria. But it really is all about money. We're running out of stocks. We're running out of military equipment. Germany, I mean, if you look at the last week I mentioned on your show, the Bundesbank is basically bankrupt. How can the central bank be bankrupt? How does the Germans expect to fund? Because what people don't understand is when this kit is sent there, it's bought with taxpayers' money from the central banks of these countries. If these countries are running out of cash, then that means the war ends, you know. And I think Stoltenberg realizes that it's as much about money as it's about equipment, and we need to push this idea, this program, that we need more and more money. And I think the takeaway from it is that I'm going to contradict myself. I said a few weeks ago, I think that that the West is looking at a short-term strategy, a short-term war. I think what's happening now with NATO and with member states and this meeting of Vilnius is that they are now shifting the goalposts again. I think that should have been the subject of
right,
your
Martin,
show.
Hold that thought. It's a very important thought. Hold that thought. We're going to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to Marrakesh. Martin, as usual, we go to a hard break and you're trying to make an important point. So please make it.
I was just about to say the shift. Now we're having a shifting goalpost strategy, which NATO indulges itself in. It's done it many times. This one now is cluster bombs, very much a losing strategy, very much let's put Ukraine on the back foot and look at a defensive way of slowing down the Russians. And also, let's introduce a new theme, which I think you're going to see a lot of in the future, which is NATO asking for more and more money. Why? Because I think for the first time, the West and NATO and Biden have acknowledged that they're looking at a long war now. Now they're no longer thinking about 6 months or next year. Now they're finally starting to realize this could be a few years and we have to prepare for it.
Well, George, I mean, Ukraine is being clobbered right now. I mean, how many years can they sustain something like this? We have to remember also infrastructure is being degraded and with the loss of life. It just kind of strikes me, gentlemen, before we move on, is that, for years and years and years, and Trump really got wound up about this, you have to pay 2% of GDP to your defense. So here we are in an existential war and you still get squeezed like 0.5%. If it's existential, we've seen all these World War II films, it's an arsenal of democracy, everybody's mobilized and all that, but nobody wants to walk away from their, cappuccinos and lattes, I guess. Okay, just let the Ukrainians do it. George.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, NATO is a protection racket, but it's a protection racket that is run by the United States, and for the European member states, it's a freebie for them, and it has been for decades, which is the Americans will always do it. I mean, the Americans complain, they say, like Trump in particular, but even others have complained, Europeans aren't doing enough, they're not pulling their weight. But why would the Europeans pull their weight? Because they know the Americans will always step up, they will always cough up the money, as Trump did. So of course they're going to say, no, we don't have the money, we can't afford everything and so on. But they know the Americans will still do it, and they will always do it, because ultimately NATO is an American racket. It's the way America exerts its power in the world. I mean, the reason why America is so dominant in the world is through NATO, through dominating European continent and the way it does. But Martin's point is absolutely right. I mean, Americans are preparing for a long war. They think that this is going to bring Russia to its knees. I mean, that's their calculation. The Russians, we're just going to bleed them dry. And the longer it drags on, the economy will eventually collapse under the sanctions. And they think there will be regime change. They look at Prigozhin. They think there's something like this will happen again. What they don't really realize is that for Russia, then essentially they say, okay, well, if NATO insists that Ukraine will be a member of NATO, irrespective of everything else, then Russia said, well, okay, we'll just steadily demolish Ukraine. So what you'll get is just a nothing, and just a piece of destroyed territory, and say, okay, you want Ukraine in NATO? Take it. This is the junk that's left over.
Or what we've said on our Gaggle podcast, a rump state, where it is just a flat plain, no agriculture, no resources, just empty real estate with low value. Martin, it's very interesting, because if we look at, degrade Russia, break its economy, we've heard this all before, haven't we? I mean, it's really interesting is over the last 16 months or so, being a resident of this country for a quarter of a century, all these stereotypes, morale will break, the economy is breaking, the Russian equipment doesn't work, it's all from World War II, but none of them have proven out. I mean, even this Prigozhin affair, which was a clown show, actually shows the reverse, that there is no institutional support or popular support for some kind of illegal governmental constitutional change. Actually, the West interpreted it the complete opposite in face of reality. Martin.
Yeah, I think credibility of the West and NATO and Western elites is also slowly eroding. There is a lot more chaff now being thrown up on social media from all sorts of people who are making these obvious comments that people weren't talking about at all previously. But there's also a lot of fake news. There's also a lot of fake news. I mean, so much of what
check out a video that George and I did on what they're doing to Russian tennis now. Okay, George is an avid tennis follower. It was amazing to what lengths, to erase Russians from tennis, Tennis players have to take a purity test, okay? Though American tennis players didn't have to take a purity test when the U.S. Invaded Iraq illegally, but Russians, they're treated differently. Keep going, Martin.
I constantly argue with people in England, in my own country, and I try and explain to them, you've got to understand that probably 70, if not 80% of everything that we read in British newspapers is basically from the propaganda unit which the Americans created in Kiev. And if you don't believe me, just go down the articles and you'll go 100 words down, 150 words. Sooner or later, you're going to hit those two key words Zelensky says. And when you read Zelensky says, you know it's, you know, and I think there's been so much of these fake news stories recently that it's really difficult to put this all into a clearer picture. You know, I think the Europeans are basically getting tired of this. They're getting tired and they're beginning to realize that the Zelensky propaganda unit is somewhat backfiring on occasion. And because now the real worry, I think, is about NATO's credibility. How much credibility can you have when you keep on changing the rules, you keep on shifting your own moral ground, you know? And now, you know, we had a lot of stories about the nuclear power plants, the Zaporizhzhia, I'm sure I pronounced that not correctly. You know, the worry was that there was going to be a dirty bomb. Zelensky even said it. He even pre-primed the press, all of his journalists, you know, in the West. And I think I'm told the Europeans called him up. Some of the European leaders called him up and said, look, cut this crap, you know, because the IEA is even there. And they haven't seen any explosives on the building at all, which you're claiming the Russians have put there, you know. So there is a certain lack of credibility. And I think these fake news stories are backfiring on the West in general, but how much longer?
You know, but at the same time, with so much control of social media, that if you start protesting, you'll just be disappeared. Oh, you know, there's no opposition. George, with the time we have remaining, Emmanuel Macron, one of your favorite politicians in Europe. George and I love following his career because he gives us so much material. He's a big supporter now of Ukrainian membership in NATO. Big supporter, okay? You know, and it's been explained to me is that, well, the French see the ascendancy of the eastern part of the NATO bloc, the Poles, the Baltic states. It's kind of sad in this day and age that France has to worry about, you know, competing with the Baltic states, but I guess they are. And then another person in the know told me, said, well, Macron sees nothing else has worked, so why not change his position? Wow, he's no de Gaulle, George, no de Gaulle.
Definitely no de Gaulle. With Macron, it's always, you know, what he says on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays have no bearing on what he says on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. There's no reason to take anything that Macron says seriously. This is a person who said that NATO is brain dead. He's also said that he's ready to talk at any time to Putin, but for some reason he doesn't do so. Again, he used to express skepticism about Ukrainian NATO. Now he's in favor of Ukrainian NATO. He is entirely driven by his own political calculations, and I think by his ego. I mean, it's like, you know, every French leader fancies himself as a Napoleon, and he's no exception. The issue, though, about competing with Poland, I think that's more salient as far as Germany is concerned, because Poland is explicitly saying that we are the leaders of Europe because we have the sway in Ukraine, we have a sway in the Baltics, we have a sway in the countries in the Eastern Europe, you know, we have, you know, the Visegrad countries and so on. You know, we're now much more important than Germany, which is always hesitating and squabbling between Sergeant Schultz and Annalena Baerbock. So Poland, you know, is emerging as a kind of the would-be leader of Eastern Europe. And the Germans, who should really put an end to this nonsense, are unable to do so because Sergeant Schultz is this sort of dweeby character that he is. And Annalena Baerbock has her own fantasies. Not sure exactly what she wants, but she's an extraordinarily ambitious person. So Germany is unable to provide any kind of lead where it could have mattered. I mean, Germany could have made a difference.
But I don't think anybody in Washington is complaining too much, George.
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Mark, I mean, it's very interesting. Again, you're talking about media, how media generates these narratives. You know, NATO's completely unified. It's Ukraine, because of the Ukraine issue, it's more unified than ever before. But if you just go to the fourth or fifth paragraph, more and more disagreements going on here. The Hungarians saying they don't want to fund any more arms shipments here. We have this differences of opinion over cluster bombs. We have a very irregular, uneven leadership IQ in Europe. All of it's really low. It's about IQ of room temperature. This doesn't bode well for, you know, for the long war, Martin.
Yeah, and you know, when we have this meeting, I think it's on Tuesday in Vilnius. You know, I think this will be a crunch time for a lot of this fake news and for a lot of how media reports on these issues. Just a few weeks ago, Western media was saying, look, a lot of Eastern European countries have had their meeting and they want to send troops to Ukraine, they want to send boots on the ground. I think we will call their bluff on at Vilnius. I think America will bang its fist on the table and say, get real, we're running the show. And this is how it's going to be. And I think you'll never hear anything more of this story again, because it was basically a bluff. We've had a lot of bluffs recently, you know, and I think there's a limit to how many bluffs you can pull off, you know, when you want to, if you want to keep credibility. But I think the Vilnius meeting will be a turning point. But this crazy, stupid, fatuous decision of creating this council for the Ukraine, and you know, and still, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And
I know what it is. They get the buffet service will be a little bit better. They'll their electronic badge will be a different color. They'll have their name on the door embossed in. Who knows? You know,
it's
maybe not gold.
It's a tease.
Well, like not exactly what it is, okay? I mean, they'll have their own mini bar in their office. I mean, this is a huge upgrade, George.
Absolutely. And they get to stay in much nicer hotels.
Maybe a chauffeur. Exactly.
And really, you know, when you look at the lifestyle of Stoltenberg and the characters at NATO, they do live high on the hog. I mean, Martin was talking about, they complain about a lack of
high
funds.
On the hog. The three of us do not live high on the hog, and we'd have no more time. Gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.